Well, I am delighted to say that joining me on the Godcast today is the Reverend Matt Woodcock. Now, Matt is a former newspaper journalist. He now works for the Church of England as an ordained minister. He puts on sell-out beer festivals up and down the land. He walks camels through town centres. So he's not your average Church of England minister. Matt, it's a pleasure to get you on the Godcast. How are you doing this morning?
Yeah, Father Alex, great to be with you. What a treat to be on this. It's great. You know, it's I feel really chuffed to have been asked to come on it. It's growing, this thing, Alex. You've created a movement. I wish I'd thought of it.
Well, you know. Whereabouts in the world are you, Matt? Where's home?
So I'm in York. So I'm originally from York, and moved away to minister in Hull for about 7 years, and we've moved back. And what's called the pioneer minister, which is, I just try and do church in a different way. I've sort of got this brief to sort of try to rethink what kind of church looks like, and I do it in West York, yeah, a home city, a bit like you.
Yeah. So just expand on that a bit more, Matt, because to people, you know, a lot of people who don't come to church, when you talk about pioneer minister, just explain to how that is perhaps different to being a jobbing vicar like I am.
Well, I could never do what you do. I mean, basically, it's most of the people I know, are quite spiritual people. You know, most, I know very few kind of out and out atheists, but realistically, they're never going to come to church on Sunday morning. Now, I love church on Sunday morning. I'm sure like you do, you know. I've grown up with it and I've loved it. But so the Church of England, in their wisdom, I suppose, have sort of come to that conclusion that some will go to church and really get something out of it, but loads and loads of people won't. So if they won't, but the spiritual, how do we sort of tap into that? How do we kind of help people along with their spiritual journey? What does church community look like if you're not actually in a church? And that's my job to work that out and think about that and sort of try to grow community in a new way.
Yeah, Matt, I used to have in a previous life, I used to work for Argos, and my area manager used to say to me, if you always do what you've always done, you'll always get what you've always got. And I used to go, well, that's a lot of nonsense. But actually, it stuck with me because I do think that churches sometimes think that the Eucharist, in all its beauty, is enough to grow congregations, but it's not really shaping out that way, is it? What's your view on that?
I don't think it is. I think that I think lots of people who would go to a Eucharist or would go to a Sunday would actually get something out of it, but they're just not. It's just not in their DNA. They've had no spiritual or church grounding whatsoever. So and so much people's lives are so busy. You've got sport and your kids and all the rest of stuff. So it's just not realistic to think, even though they might get something out of it, that they're going to sort of commit to church. Like some will, always some will. And I'm not one of these pioneer ministers who thinks that traditional church is terrible and we're all doing it right now. I don't believe that. I just think there's room for everyone, and some of us need to try and do it a different way. Yeah. And I suppose that's all I'm trying to do.
And were you a church regular? Were you somebody that was going to church every Sunday?
Well, therein lies a tale, Father Alex. My mum, sort of, when I was about 5 years old, my parents split up and it was all really horrible. And my mum wasn't from a church background. And she came to faith when I was about 5 years old. And she had sort of quite a dramatic sort of conversion. And she started going to our local church, and so she dragged me and my sister on when we were kids. But I was a bit of a nightmare kid. I was that kid that you didn't want your kids to play with. And she tried, bless her, to drag me along to church. And unfortunately, I got expelled from Sunday school and brought tremendous shame on the whole family. And it was quite a difficult time for my mum, and so I didn't start very well at church. But the local vicar, the local priest, was unbelievable, and he did. I mean, he was the uncoolest bloke vicar you've ever come across. But we all loved him because he was only ever himself, And he would run a Friday night youth club, which was mayhem. And he was so full of grace. So I used to get kicked out literally every single week of this youth club for bad behaviour. A few of us did. And the next Friday, he'd always give you a second chance to come back in. And it's a funny story, because one of his co-leaders, a guy called Paul, said, "I can't take this anymore. That Woodcock, if he comes again, I'm going to have to leave because I just can't do it." And Derek said, "No, we're about grace in this church. And I think there's something about this lad, and we need to let him come back in." So this Paul stormed out and said, "Right, I'm never coming back." And now he's my father-in-law. But the point is, this Derek, his way with us always stayed with me. And I think I saw a little bit of what Jesus was like in this bloke, in this priest, and it had a profound effect on me.
Those first connections are so important, aren't they? Your story, it kind of hits home with me. I got kicked out of the Cubs for refusing to go to church in a little village in Burnley called Worsthorne. And then a few years ago, I was covering their Holy Communion as their vicar was away. And I said to the congregation, "My God, if somebody had said to me 20 years ago, 30 years ago, that I'd be stood at this altar after being booted out of the Cubs." But then not going to church, meeting a vicar who was, he just set a wonderful first impression, wasn't intimidating, wasn't unpleasant, wasn't pious, was just so down to earth. And because of him, it started a journey for me. So taking that all into account, you didn't quite answer my question in terms of going to church. Were you a church regular as an adult? Was matters of faith in the back of your mind?
So I used to go to these Christian camps. So this vicar used to take us all the way to North Wales. So they sort of started my journey. So when I was about 16, 17, I really started going along to this kind of, it was like this free church. It was like really black and white theologically and biblically. I mean, looking back now, I mean, some of their theology was like right of Donald Trump. I mean, it was unbelievable. But the pastor, his house was like the youth club. I mean, we just hang out there all day. But I realised that it wasn't for me where they were going with some of their views. So I started going along to my local Church of England church when I was about sort of 18 sort of time, because there was a few of us, and we had a sort of good social thing. But I was always the lad on the back of the pew moaning how rubbish it was. So I had a bit of a love-hate relationship with it, but I kept in touch. And one day the local youth worker who works at the church, she took me for this drink, and she said, "Matt, will you stop moaning? If you're going to keep moaning about how crap everything is, why don't you stop coming? Because it's doing everyone's head in." And it was so, she was like a young lass. And I just thought, wow, she's absolutely right. Mm-hmm. And she said, "I've got this idea, this alternative service. If it's so crap, why don't you do something about it?" So that sort of set me off on that journey of doing some stuff myself. So yeah, I'll never forget when she said that.
Yeah. And meanwhile, as all this is going on, you're going to into work, into the media industry through journalism. Tell us about what you were doing there before ordination call.
Well, my dad was quite a sort of high profile journalist for the national press, and so I rebelled against doing anything like that, because you always don't want to do what your parents are doing. But eventually I realised that it was a great, almost a calling for me, being a writer and a journalist, and I got on my local paper, the York Evening Press, quite quickly, did all my training and stuff, and it was like I'd found the job for me. I mean, I absolutely loved it. I mean, because a bit like you're a Burnley lad, and so you know people in the thing. But when you're a journalist, that's like manna from heaven, because you're constantly getting people telling you stuff about what's going on. So I was getting all these wild and wonderful stories from just my mates. Mm. And so I rose up quite quickly, and they loved it. They had a local lad on the paper. I ended up doing, I had my own column by the end, and lots of feature writing. But I just loved it. I was that journalist that did those kind of stories that you didn't think were true, like the talk, you know, the beer drinking dogs and the sort of, you know, that kind of stuff.
I'm trying to think of the guy who now works, Tony Livesey. What was that paper he worked?
Oh yeah,
that kind
Sunday
of
stuff. Sport.
Yeah, that kind of stuff. and so this turning your attentions to ordination, how did that come? Was it a slow burner for you, Matt, or was it kind of wham bam, thank you, man, we're on, let's make this happen?
Well, a bit like you, you know, when you were presiding at the Eucharist in this church, you know, you never would have thought that you'd have got a dog collar around your neck for life. And it's exactly the same with me, loving my life, loving my job. And I had this proper road to Damascus sort of moment. And when I share this, it makes me sound like I've completely lost my mind, but I can only share what happened. I'm not particularly from the charismatic tradition in church. You know, I don't wave my arms in the air and all that. I'm quite sort of, but for such a loud person, I'm quite quiet with it. But my road to Damascus was the year 19 to Selby. And I'm driving to cover a court case in Selby Magistrates Court in my battered old Ford Fiesta. And I just had this sort of encounter. It was like I'm driving along and suddenly I feel like, it's like going over a roller coaster, that feeling in your stomach, that you feel like something's happening. And I pulled into this lay-by, and I'd been a Christian a while, so I knew it was something spiritual going on, but I just felt like, what is going on? I thought I was going mad. And so I prayed, and I just sort of said, right, whatever you're trying to tell me, I'm open to it, but I need to finish my shift. So I carried on and finished my court case, and then legged it straight to my vicar's house. And I just ran into his vicarage because I was so panicking about what was going on. And he turned to me and he said, before I said anything, he said, do you think you should be working for the church? And it was like, hallelujah. And it was just literally, we just got a house. I was on good money. And I went home to tell my wife. I said, Anna, I think God's calling me to work for the church. And all the colour drained from her face. And she said, well, if it's God, we what else can we do? So within a month, I'd handed my notice in. My editor, I still remember him, tears of laughter, like rolling down his face. I mean, everybody thought I'd lost my mind. My dad wouldn't speak to me. It was just, yeah, but I knew that it was right.
Do you know, Matt, our pathways are very similar. I mean, mine was a different story, but and the interview is about you, not me. But I just think there's something important there about what you said about your wife, because a good friend of mine said to me, you know, because they all thought I was bonkers. And within this, one of my closest mates said, you know what, the real calling is on your wife, because she's listening to some of the nonsense that you're coming out with. And she's saying, okay, let's run with it and let's just go slowly. How important was your wife in that process for you?
Oh, absolute bedrock. When everybody else thought I'd lost my mind, I think she did privately, but she was just so, you know, you can imagine someone coming home and saying, basically, we've got this massive mortgage, I'm leaving my job with all the security, and we're gonna leave all that, and we're gonna try something else. So I took this massive pay cut to sort of work for the church, but she stayed loyal and tremendously supportive. So thanks be to God for my wife.
and being ordained, Matt, where do your biggest frustrations come from with the great old institution of the Church of England that we're joyously part of?
How long is this interview? No, the thing is, there's so many people who have a go at the Church of England, because it's, you know, not least us priests and people who go, and it's the easiest target in the world, because it's just so, well, it's an institution, and institutions, by their very nature, are slow to change and stuck in their ways often. So my frustration is when something seems so obvious or not working or needs to be done in a different way. Sometimes the Church of England is so unbelievably slow at changing. So there's that frustration. But I think more than anything else, my biggest thing is we've lost touch with real people often. You know, we are up here somewhere, you know, pretending that everybody's educated and can understand the words that we say or the, you know, most people have no idea what's going on often in our liturgies and the way we do it. And so that's a big frustration. People we're ordaining often, and church people, have no idea how to reach out to just ordinary people's lives. Loads do, but too many don't. And I think with the training aspects and all how we train people, often the theology and the learning and the essays are the most important thing. And sometimes I want to say, well, yeah, but have we taught people how to actually speak to the bloke in the corner shop about life? And do you understand what I'm saying?
I do. Hallelujah, brother. Because I mean, I completely concur with what you're saying. Yeah, I was reading a quote that you said that we need to speak the language of the Ant and Dec and Coronation Street. I've described it as we need to appeal to the red top readers as well as the broadsheet.
Yeah.
But so many churches are run by broadsheet readers and the academics and things like that. And that's not a criticism. I think clever people are very important, but the reality of the ministry as opposed to the training are very different. How do we?
What I would say, just to caveat that, is things are changing now, and you know, lots more. Like the thing, I know your Bishop of Burnley, Philip. You know, he's really doing some amazing stuff and inspiring people to get back into the estates and get back. You know, put giving the church back to the people. So it's not all doom and gloom.
Yeah, that's very true, and we're blessed to have a Reverend Cat, who's a pioneer minister with us at St Matthew's, working very close with the urban estates. But how do we break down some of those other barriers, though, Matt? How do we bring the church from up here to a more, I don't want to call it a level playing field, but to a more working class environment? I mean, that's a big question, I know, but what kind of things?
We have to get loads better. I think you're right. Some people just are intelligent and radio 4, not radio 2, and that's absolutely fine. We can't change who we are. You know, we're all wonderfully different, but we have to see people, really see, like in a local parish context or whatever community we're in. We have to just see and really engage with the people in front of us. And we need to get loads better at saying yes. Churches are brilliant at saying no. No, you can't park there. No, you can't do this. Yeah. No, could you imagine a situation where your local parish church, but people actually thought that was the yes place, where I can use that building for those gigs or for that children's party, or I can... Do you see what I mean? I think that... priests, churches that say yes, that really engage where people are at before they've done any baptism class, before they've thought about communion, they're the ones to me that are really the heartbeat of not just spiritual life, but the whole community life. And the best churches do that.
Yeah. And the other aspect of that is through lockdown, Matt, is, and I'm sure this is the same for many churches, that our online presence has rocketed and people's engagement has been fabulous. Now we're kind of coming through the end of the tunnel. I think that creates some new challenges for churches about, you know, how do we maintain what we've got and how do we grow what we've created. As a pioneer minister, Matt, what are your kind of hints and tips for once something new's begun, to sustain it and let it breathe and give it oxygen and become something bigger and better?
I think for me, it's always about getting people alongside who are passionate about it too, but not necessarily making them jump through all kinds of hoops. So a lot of the people who are involved in the stuff that I'm doing would not at the moment probably class themselves as card-carrying Christians, you know, but they believe in community life, and they believe in something deeper than just, you know, just themselves. And so I think whatever project we're starting, or whether it's online or in person, getting a little team of people who believe in what you're doing is really, really important. And not putting any kind of theological barriers between them getting involved or being part of what's going on at church. For me, the best churches are the best communities, have all kinds of people involved in them, you know, without ever making them jump through a sort of hoop, you know. So, and it makes life messy, and it makes church life really messy and difficult. But isn't that the best thing about life? Surely it is for me.
Well, it is for me as well. But I mean, just, you know, just with the Godcast, for example, some people in church have questioned, is this a hobby or should it be a hobby, or is it a ministry? And it's kind of put me in this kind of awkward position. I feel it's a ministry because of it's very different to what people do. But what would you say about that, Matt, in terms of trying new stuff and you know, what's ministry to some people is just nothing but to others. You know, I mean, we're in a very Eucharistic area. Burnley is traditionally very set on its Holy Communion services, which are wonderful, which I get enriched from myself. But yeah, what's your thoughts?
Well, what you're doing on this podcast is about as much ministry as anything I can think of. When I discovered it a couple of weeks ago, you know, you're getting the spiritual and the sacred. The people go like this. What this kind of thing does is it shows that actually loads of life is spiritual, and loads of people think about the kind of things that we're preaching on Sunday morning, but they just don't have those kind of churchy words, but they're all thinking about it. Mm. And what this kind of thing does, it opens up a conversation about spiritual matters. And I don't think there's anything more fascinating people to think about or talk about than what's going on in here. And so it's absolutely a ministry, and we need to be doing at this kind of thing as ministers, because otherwise we're just cloistered and in our own little holy bubbles. This has certainly challenged me, what you're doing, to think actually we all need to be asking questions of each other of what's this. I mean, and it's no secret, it's no surprise to me that you're getting high profile people actually wanting to talk about this stuff. Why? Because no one's ever asked them before.
Yeah. It's been extraordinary, because I just keep saying to my wife, Sarah, you know, is that the mainstream media would like you to believe that matters of faith and spirituality are not important, but I agree with you. I think people want to talk about these things. They've got a view. They might not always hold the view that you have, and they might have a different theology, and they might even be an extreme atheist, but they have a view, and it matters to them, doesn't it? And yourself, Matt, who's you know, I'm speaking on locally on social media, you are speaking to the nation quite frequently through Radio 2, which I guess you take as a real privilege and honor to be able to do that, but it goes with some responsibility as well, doesn't it?
Yeah, and sometimes it's really scary to do it because it's a real sort of privilege, you know. You just, for those 2-3 minutes, you know, you're sort of representing what you believe, but you have to write it and broadcast it in such a way that it's got to make everybody think. And surely what we believe as Christians, there's so much richness and so much depth to it. There's enough there to make anybody think about, well, what do I think about that? How is that helpful to my life? So yeah, I think The more that we have those conversations, you know, if 2% of the population are going to church, which is fine, that means 98% people aren't going to church. But we know they're all still thinking about the sort of things we're talking about. So we've got to find ways to open those conversations for me.
Yeah, and I guess when you've done your thought for the day, Matt, and the microphone goes off, Does that sometimes instigate some conversations with guests in the studio or the people that you're involved with? Does it usually create a conversation?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I remember Dermot O'Leary, when I first started doing it on a Saturday morning, it was Dermot's show. And, you know, and you see Dermot up there doing his X Factor thing, and it's great. But actually, he's a really, really spiritual bloke whose faith is so important to him. But, you know, often celebrities, they can be lambasted for saying, oh, I'm a Christian, or I'm this, or I'm that. But what you realise is, in the world of entertainment and celebrity, these people are human beings with all the same questions and all the same, you know, wonderings like the rest of us have. And that was a real eye opener to me about how much that is a part of them. And mind, body, and spirit, it's become like this massive thing in the celebrity world. You know, they're all doing podcasts about what it means to sort of not be anxious and all that. So I've been surprised by how spiritual that world is.
Mm. Yeah, and you've used your previous occupation to create a book, books now, and they've done really well for you. Was that a great experience for you to write in the context of your Christian faith? And to write in language what I would perhaps describe as, I know you're an Oasis fan, I thought about this, that was quite clever, it might be completely nonsense, but you know, you write in the style of a crashing cymbal in a champagne supernova approach. It's kind of, you know, it's real, it's gritty. Tell us about the books.
Well, I just think when my road to Damascus moment happened, I used to go and see a nun called Sister Cecilia, who was my like my spiritual guide, really. And she said, you need to keep a diary of what's going on in your life because you'll deny it ever happened. So from 2009 right up to now, I write 600 words every day in a diary.
Right.
And you'll be in it today. And so I thought, when I got ordained, I realised, well, there must be other people like me out there, but maybe they've not, you know, they don't think that they could ever get ordained or that the church could ever be for them because they only see it one way. And I realised I had these diaries which were so brutally honest because that's what a diary is. You know, you're talking. So I decided that I was going to just write a book, a diary in diary form. I always liked Adrian Mole and that kind of stuff. And yeah. So I thought, well, I'll do it in that style, and so I did. So I wrote it and then sent it to a friend, and he just went, "Oh, well, you've got to get this published." So it just sort of got the ball rolling, and here we are. And it just sort of seemed to strike a chord with people because people like diaries, and the more honest you are, the better they are. I mean, we're all fascinated by what people are really thinking. So I decided that if I had a rubbish day or I had a fallout with somebody, that would go in. And if I had a brilliant day, you know, I wasn't going to whitewash it. The Bible never whitewashes anything. So I thought, well, I'm not going to do that. So it seemed to work well.
The old Adrian Mole, God, I mean, I remember.
Classic.
The first one, The Secret Diary of Adrian Mole, Age 13 and 3/4. It's the first book I remember. I read it in bed, absolutely, with tears running down my eyes. And I've read the whole lot. And it's a sad loss.
And Pandora, Alex, the Pandora bit, we've all been there, haven't we?
Yeah, is it Malcolm Muddleworth or something who he writes to? Love it, absolutely love it. You should, if you've not read Adrian Mole, you need to go and read it. Matt, I'm mindful that you are naturally an enthusiastic and you're an effervescent kind of character. When I first started coming to church when I was 40-odd, that something that struck me and something that still strikes me is that many churches just seem to lack confidence, and they're not particularly joyful places. How can you encourage people who might watch this and think, well, my church is a bit like that, we're a bit timid and we're a bit... How would you encourage people who aren't like you, who aren't kind of ultra enthusiastic and effervescent and outgoing. What would your tips be? Where would it be a good starting point be for them?
I think for me, it's, you know, when you turn up on a Sunday morning we're trying to, it should be the best kind of worship experiences or church experiences have draw within us a range of emotions or experiences. So, you know, some of that is just the holiness of where you are, and some of that is the depth of it or the learning of it. Somewhere along the line, we've lost, or many churches have lost, like you say, that the joy of it. I mean, it's good news for crying out loud, but we treat it like it's slightly indifferent news. And I'm not saying it's all yay like that, but I think for me, it starts at the church door and the warmth of a welcome. You know, I know most priests I know are very introverted, kind, wonderful people. And I think that working up welcome and creating a space where people can make friends, one of the most heartbreaking things ever is when you meet a genuinely lonely people and not just someone on their own, but inside here, desperate and lonely. Surely what we're doing has to be the answer to that. And one of the ways we do it is creating spaces where it's easy to make friends. And when that happens, places just naturally become joyful because you're arriving somewhere and you're meeting your friends and people who have got your back and believe in you. And so naturally that the spiritual temperature, but also the relationship temperature, begins to warm up in any kind of community, be it church or a football club or whatever it is. But we've got to take a few risks with how we sort of do that. You know, tea and toast, we've started tea and toast before the service, that lovely smell of coffee and toast pouring out the church door. It's just, it's not rocket science. You've actually got to work as hard at that as you do the liturgy and stuff, just to warm the place up.
Yeah. And how do you see the future, Matt? You know, there's, I know that in our own diocese, there are churches that are going to have a real difficult time with COVID, you know, the ability to fulfill their parish shared. How do you see, and I don't mean, I'm not talking 20, 30 years, but how do you see kind of the short-term future over the next couple of years panning out for the Church of England?
Well, there's no positives of COVID really, but one of the interesting things about COVID is that it's forced an institution that doesn't like change to change quite radically. Yeah. In a very short space of time. So we'll never get this opportunity again to really rethink everything about how we do it. You know, I can see lots of worship staying online because some people will just keep enjoying that. But I also think it's an opportunity to really think through how we go forward. And I think lay people who are ordained, because the money situation is so desperate, it will rely more and more on people who aren't vicars and priests. And so I think some of it will start smaller, but it might just be, you know, that one of the big learning lessons is that people need each other. If we're not the hub of creating stronger communities and friends and areas of support, and I don't know who's supposed to be. So that's a great opportunity because people have seen that their local church during COVID, by and large, has stepped up to the plate. And people don't forget that. And I think that's an opportunity for real growth in all kinds of ways.
Yeah, I agree. I think the way that some of the churches have stepped up to the mark in terms of supporting communities has been incredible, and actually think that has been heard by the country as well, and I think that's a real positive. Matt, it's been a real pleasure talking to you. I want to talk to you about kind of non-church stuff, because what people are seeing in you is a very human guy, very down to earth, perhaps not what they expect to see from a Church of England minister. You're a bit of a rock and roll fan, aren't you? You've got the Strokes t-shirt on there. Who was the you like your music, who was the first band you saw live, Matt?
The first band I saw live were, I think it was Shed Seven. I know you had Rick on the other day, but when they first started, I went to see them, and it was I just fell in love with indie rock music and Oasis. I'm probably a little bit too obsessed. You've got like Jesus here, and unfortunately Oasis just about. So, you know, I think you said on your podcast with Rick how music stirs us and really just makes your life just better, just with good music. So I've always used music as a tool to sort of tap into those spiritual sides of people and in myself.
It's you know, our parallels are quite similar. I Jesus is definitely up here, but I have a Depeche Mode tattoo. Look, I mean, I'm a bit, you know, my kids just tell me to shut up going on about them, but they're important to me in my journey of faith. So you've seen Oasis, I guess, with the old bucket hat on, and
yeah,
and ever done a bit of crowd surfing or anything like that?
I have actually. Yeah, I think I was losing my mind a bit. The week before I got ordained, I went to see Liam Gallagher's, and when he Oasis broke up, he had this bit of a dodgy band called BDI for a bit. Mm. And I went to see him in Liverpool the week. So I had my ordination retreat on the Friday, and I went to see Liam Gallagher on the Wednesday. And I just lost leave of my senses. And so my friend lifted me above his shoulder. I did this crowd surf, and I'm like, in front of Liam. And he sort of pointed at me like, who's this nutter? And then I landed on my head.
Have you met
him? But yeah, that was euphoric.
Yeah, I know you're mates with Rick, but have you met any of these guys? Have they turned up in the Radio 2 studio? Have you actually met Liam or Noel?
No, I haven't. I missed Noel by 1 week, but I'm a believer. Never meet your heroes because they'll always disappoint you.
Yeah.
Have you met Dave Gahan?
It's Dave Gahan, Matt, actually, but people have said, oh, you need to get him on, but I would like to interview a lot of people, but I think you're right. Don't interview your heroes. I've got I hold him in such high esteem, and I'm sure he's a decent guy, but I don't have a yearning to interview him, actually. Yeah, and you like your footy, is that right? You like football?
Yeah, so, love York City. My dad used to take me to York City, so I'm sort of long-suffering York City fan, and sort of, I had a bit of a hiatus because they're such a frustrating team to support, but I'm sort of back into that now. And I just think that, again, that the local teams are really, really important. And I'm best mates with a few Burnley fans, Alex. So that's been interesting. The Clarets. I've got a bit of a soft spot for the Clarets as well. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's always nice to see them doing well.
I remember we did take over York some years back when we won the old fourth division. We kind of... But York have just moved out of the football ground. Have they got a new place or something?
Yeah, so they've moved out of Bootham Crescent, and they've moved to a sort of out of town, great big complex and stuff. So my friend, there was a blind auction for lots of things in the team, and my friend bought the Welcome to Bootham Crescent sign. It's massive. So we've had that outside the church for a few weeks, so people can get a photo with it.
Oh, fabulous! Yeah, I like that. That's great. And finally, you're in a city that is. Well, it holds one of the most beautiful minsters anywhere, doesn't it? And it feels, when I visit, quite a spiritual place. What's life like living in York on a daily basis? Good place to live?
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting city because obviously it's a tourist trap and you get all your tourists. But it's quite a sort of... On the outer edges, it's quite a sort of more of a working class city than you'd think. It's got a lot of railway history, so loads and loads of people would work on the railways. So it's it's a real privilege to live here. You know, I feel very, very lucky, and the Minster itself is just mind blowing when you walk in there, and you'll often find me before I do my church thing. I often go for their early morning sort of services because no one talks. You just have half an hour of unbelievable quiet, and I need that. So that's been, it's great to have the Minster.
Fabulous. Matt, it's been a real joy talking to you. It's been great hearing about your journey and your engagement with the media. And I do hope our paths cross again at some point. But for now, Matt, thanks ever so much for coming on the Godcast. If anybody would like to see any more interviews like this, there's There's lots on the godcast.co.uk. Celebrities, clergy, writers, singers, you name it, they're all there. So do take a look. But for now, Matt, thanks for your time. And we send our love and prayers and blessings to that wonderful city of York.
Thanks, Alex. And I'm going to do two things. I'm going to listen to Depeche Mode because I don't know anything about them. And I'm going to pray that you get Noel Gallagher on the Godcast.
We'll see, eh? God bless.
Thanks, Alex. Cheers.